Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. Wow. You may or may not, either way is fine, have noticed that it's been a long time since my last episode, longer than I told you it was going to be. And I'm going to explain why. Kind of, for those of you who care. So basically, I mean, you can hear a little bit. I have been battling a sinus infection for a few days. That's not why I haven't done the podcast, but just excuse my voice. Before I took the holiday break, and I have been struggling with coming up a lot of times with content for a weekly podcast about the TV I'm watching. And that's been for a couple of reasons. One is that since the pandemic has quote unquote ended, I have had less time to watch TV. Also, the TV that I've been watching has been more escapist and not the kind of TV that I really feel the need to analyze. And that's why I've been watching it. It's not why I started the podcast. I started the podcast because I love to complain about TV and I love to like go deep into a lot of these TV shows, but I find myself gravitating now more toward TV shows that I do not have to think about and that I don't really feel the need to talk about. My best friend Andy, who we did the Secret TV Critic podcast, a miniseries with RuPaul's Secret Celebrity Drag Race over the summer. We typically do like catch up phone calls because we're not in the same state, like every other week or so. And we're on the phone for a couple hours, and usually at least half of that is talking about the TV that we share in common. We haven't really done that in a couple of months because we aren't really watching TV, and the TV that we are watching, there's nothing to talk about or it's not the same. And if it's something she's passionate about, she'll tell me about it and make me want to watch it, and vice versa. But neither of us have really felt all that into what we're watching. And I think that's symptomatic of what is happening in the world right now, is that, you know, not only are we all busy all over again, we haven't really learned anything, I don't think, from the pandemic. So we're all just overworking ourselves to the point of exhaustion, and we're falling right back into these traps of like, I don't know, doing things that don't bring us joy and doing things solely because we need to make money. And then you turn on the news and it's like, you know, World War III has been imminent for a decade now. And I don't know, stuff like we're seeing, you know, inflation and I don't know, gas prices. And if you have a chicken that can lay eggs, you are American royalty right now. And it's just the world sucks and everything sucks. So like when I'm sitting down at the end of the day after I'm teaching my classes, where, you know, in this past semester, I submitted more plagiarism reports than I ever have in the past. And now I start classes this week again for the next semester. And I'm going to be contending with ChatGPT and all this AI bullshit and school shootings and shootings in general, and a six-year-old shot their teacher a few weeks ago, and my best friend, who is a teacher, is being doxxed on Fox News, and it's a lot. So when I come home at the end of the day, I want to watch The Real Housewives. I want to, but even that's been a little dark, as I mentioned, on Salt Lake City and Beverly Hills last year. I want to watch shit that is just really inconsequential. So I've been gravitating towards things that are just mindless. And I really do mean mindless. Like, I'm obviously watching all the drag races and that kind of thing, but I'm also watching, like I'm going to talk about today, The Real Friends of WeHo and The Traitors on Peacock. And I started The Way Home, the new Hallmark drama about like a teenage girl whose pond in her grandmother's backyard lets her travel back in time to meet her own mother as a teenager. You know, like I'm not taking anything all that seriously. It's my schedule of what I'm watching is like real light and real stupid. I'm watching almost nothing, and the things that I am watching are just not great. So that's one reason that I haven't really been updating the podcast. The other, again, is that I'm just busy and I haven't really had, you know, chunks of time to just sit down and like look for stories to report and try to think of TV that I haven't covered already to cover, or dig deep into like looking for recommendations. Because also the other thing is that the kind of TV not only is not up to, is not at what I'm used to, but also TV in general hit a high point maybe last year, year before. And like, we've been slowly kind of like whittling away at the type and amount of TV that's being released. So, you know, I talked a lot in the last few episodes about like HBO Max cutting back on content and removing content, and other networks have started to do the same. TNT has pulled a show that was supposed to premiere in a couple of weeks. I forget the name of it. Something about Lazarus. The Lazarus Effect, maybe. Miracle Workers, the new season of the show with Steve Buscemi and Daniel Radcliffe, was supposed to premiere in a couple weeks. They've pulled that and are sitting on it because they've changed their entire network model, where they're moving away from scripted and original content. And they are also owned by HBO Max, Warner Brothers, whatever. So we're also seeing like streamers like Netflix just not taking chances on things anymore and just canceling stuff outright. They canceled one of my favorite shows of last year that was left on a cliffhanger, Uncoupled, the gay rom-com by Darren Star, who did Sex and the City and Younger, starring Neil Patrick Harris. That's not coming back. They canceled 1899, which apparently also ended on a cliffhanger. So it's harder to like get into TV when everything is so uncertain. Even regular linear broadcasting on cable and broadcast TV, it's hard to know what is going to succeed and what's not, because people's viewing habits are so erratic. So you can look at something that has wretched ratings and think like, well, it could get renewed. But then you'll look at something that has better ratings that's being canceled because it's a newer show, or it has stars in it, so it's more expensive. Like, it's just, it's a crapshoot of what is going to stick around and what we should be investing our time in. So I've been investing my time in, you know, like miniseries or one season reality series that like, even if it doesn't come back, I get a full story. And that's just kind of the direction that shit's going. So the state of TV is much different than it was 2 years ago when I started this. My viewing habits are much different. Your viewing habits are probably much different. And the final reason that I have kind of been sitting on not doing this podcast for a little while is that your listening habits to this podcast are different. And that's okay too. There have been many recent episodes, and I don't know what the reasoning behind this is, if it's that you don't enjoy what I'm talking about, so you skip over, if you're busy that week, so you skip over and never catch up, I don't know. But just like the audience for a lot of the past few episodes has been about half of what it was this time last year and well into like May of 2022, to sometimes like a third of what it was. Like, there are some episodes where I'm, you know, it's like 10, 11 people are listening to it, where, you know, this time last year it was 60, 70 for some episodes. And I do this because I enjoy it and because it's fun for me, but also like, I can just talk to myself if I need to, or talk to the few of you who I know listen to this in real life, or just tweet rather than doing this format, and save myself some time and some energy and my voice. So yeah, I don't know what this podcast is going to look like going forward. This episode, as you can already tell, is a little bit of a mess structurally, and maybe that's what this is going to be, is that it's like, whenever I feel like popping in, I'll just pop in and talk. Maybe it's that I just go to every other week, which may be more realistic. Maybe it's that I do like once a month and I talk for a long time about all the stuff that I watched and liked and didn't like. I don't know. I'm going to try to figure out a schedule and stick to it, because I know that a regular schedule is easier for everyone, whether it's bi-weekly or monthly or whatever it is. I'm going to try to be more transparent and more consistent, but I just don't know. Like I said, I don't know what the future holds for this, and I don't know what my life is going to look like, you know? So that's that. But here I am today, and even though a lot has happened, what I'm going to be talking about today, I had, over this little break that I took, I had a bit of an epiphany. And it's that I don't give a fuck anymore about what critics, experts, those types of people have to say anymore. The title of this podcast is Fake TV Critic. And that comes from both a Twitter and a blog that I started. A blog I started when I was in college. So I think it was like 2009, maybe, I started writing on that blog. And it was literally the reason I started it is because I had friends, some of you who listen to this podcast still, hello, who used to come to me and be like, you watch a lot of TV. What should I be watching? We're the same type of viewer. We have the same taste. You are not a real critic. You like the everyman shit. What should I be watching? What do you like that's on TV right now? So I started keeping that blog of like all these new shows that were premiering and what I thought of their pilots. And, you know, I was really into TV ratings at the time and scheduling and all that stuff. Like, I found it really interesting trying to get a peek behind like what networks were thinking. So I started that blog when I was in college as like a distraction. From my schoolwork. Some say distraction, some say procrastination, but you know, tomato, tomato. And I then started a general Twitter that, you know, still has very few followers. I think I'm like a little over 100, which is fine because I literally, that was just for me to like live tweet things or tweet TV reactions and stuff as I was watching TV. And that's what it is. The reason I call myself a fake TV critic is that I'm criticizing things and I'm talking about things and I'm doing the same things that a critic does, but I'm not a real critic. I'm just a person. I'm a gay man. I'm a young white gay man. Well, not so young anymore, but happy 35th birthday to me this week. I'm so fucking old. Anyway, I am within the target demographic of TV advertisers. I am the type of person that in theory people are making TV for. So what kind of TV do I like? That's it. That's how this whole thing started. So I don't know why, when the whole reason I started this podcast, this Twitter, this blog was to like be the antithesis of critics. I don't know why I still listen to them, but I do. When a new show premieres, I look at the Rotten Tomatoes and the Metacritic scores to like gauge whether I should even bother watching it. I start watching it and I'm like, I hate this. Did critics like it? Or I love this. What did critics think? And typically I am in complete opposition to critics. Not typically, but a lot of time. And one of the examples I talked about in the last few episodes is the show Severance on Apple TV, which everyone told me to watch. And by everyone, I mean critics. I think I know one person who actually watched the show in real life and they liked it, but told me that it was slow and that I might not like it. So, okay, they knew. And I did finish it. I finished it over this holiday break. I watched all 9 episodes and I did not like it. It got a little better throughout the season. Like, I didn't want to jump off a bridge the whole time. I actually sat down and watched it. Like, I wasn't completely distracted the whole time like I was in the first couple episodes. But I didn't like it. And it ended on a cliffhanger, which, why? Why are we doing this? This show in particular did not deserve a cliffhanger. Like, it's not the kind of... There was no plot until the last episode. That's what I'm trying to get at, is that, like, there was no reason for that cliffhanger to exist, because when you end on a cliff, the cliffhanger was the story starting. Do you know what I mean? If you watch Severance, you absolutely know what I mean. Is that there was like almost no story until the last 30 seconds of the season. And then once the story started, they ended the season. And I hate it. I hate when shows do that. I hate when movies do that, like with trilogies and shit. I hate cliffhangers in general. I think they're stupid. I've been burned by them too many times in the past. Just thinking of all the kinds of shows I used to watch, and like it was a nightmare. And I think shows used to do it on broadcast because they thought it would help them get a new season when they were like borderline, like on the bubble. And sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. So there were a bunch of shows I used to watch that ended on cliffhangers, and I hate it because I have PTSD. So, but all the critics loved it. It's nominated for all these Emmys and Golden Globes and Critics' Choice Awards and all this shit, and I didn't like it. And I feel that way about a lot of shows. I watched like half an episode of The Bear, which even regular people I know loved. I couldn't get into it. I may go back at some point. But basically, this coming year is going to be about not paying attention to things because critics and experts, quote unquote, say that I should, and just watching and enjoying what I want to watch and enjoy. The Oscar nominations, if you are listening to this on release day Monday, are coming out tomorrow. I believe they're coming out on Tuesday anyway. And that's another great example, is that I every year make an effort to watch the Oscar nominated films in at least the major categories, and if I can, the like shorts and shit too. And I almost never like what's nominated. Like, I'll have a favorite usually, but when I make my top 10 lists of movies, there's like, it's very little crossover in my top 10 movies of the year versus the Best Picture top 10 nominations. And I feel like it's gonna happen again this year. My favorite movie of 2022, fucking sue me, was Avatar: The Way of Water. And I know that there's a hate campaign against it, and cinephiles want it to fail, and they're hoping that it bombs because they don't like that it's a spectacle. That movie is brilliantly made. It was 3 hours long, and it felt like it was 10 minutes. It is beautiful. It is an unbelievable, like, mental mind fuck to watch that movie in a theater in 3D on a giant screen with surround sound and shit. Like, it was so immersive and absolutely incredibly beautiful to look at and just well done. Like, it's James Cameron. You can hate that he makes blockbusters, but he makes the most intelligent blockbusters of all time. Avatar, Titanic, Avatar, Way of Water, fucking Terminator and Terminator 2. Like, stop it. Let's stop pretending that James Cameron isn't an amazing filmmaker and that we want his movies to fail just because they cost a bunch of money. Who cares? This is an event movie. It is a movie that is meant to be seen on screens, and that's how you need to experience Avatar: The Way of Water. It's how I experienced it, and I loved it. I recently rewatched the first Avatar and couldn't get through it, but I loved it in theaters, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with a movie needing to exist in a certain time and space, and that's what the Avatar movies are. But because I had such an amazing time and it was so emotional and beautiful to see, that was my favorite movie of the year. My second favorite movie was Spoiler Alert, which is a very small, independent, gay, tearjerker / rom-com, very much in the vein of like Terms of Endearment, based on a memoir that I loved, also called Spoiler Alert, by Michael Osiello, who, speaking of TV, came up with TV Line, the website, used to write for TV Guide. Love him, loved his book, loved this movie starring Jim Parsons and Ben Aldridge. Also queer actors playing queer parts, love to see it. And it's about Michael Osiello and his partner Kit, who is diagnosed with cancer and dies. Doesn't sound like a laugh riot or something that you want to watch around Christmas time, but it was a beautiful, simple movie that was very much like a movie that straight people have gotten made for them a million times. This was made by and for the gays, and I fucking loved it. I also loved Bros. That's in my top five. It pissed off a lot of other people, and most people didn't even fucking see it. Streaming now on Peacock. Go watch it. So, like, I hated Tar. I hated it. I rented that shit. I put out my money, and I literally could not make it more than a half hour, and I was so bored. I could not stand it. I don't like Cate Blanchett. I didn't like it. I was bored by Elvis. Sorry about it. I read The Whale, haven't seen the movie yet. I want to see the movie, but like, I know how that's gonna go because I've read the play. And I find it to be a pretty offensive script. I can't imagine they're gonna do much to change my mind by making it into a movie. As a fat gay man myself, I feel like I'm entitled to that opinion. So like, I did not like Everything Everywhere All at Once. It was fine, but it was also too long and ultimately very confusing to sit through. And like, it was really cool. And Kiwi Kwong, give him that Oscar. Michelle Yeoh, give her that Oscar. They were fucking fantastic. Jamie Lee Curtis, also great. Stephanie Hsu, also great. But like, the movie itself, half the time I had no idea what the hell was going on. So what I'm getting at is that like, all these movies that people tell me are great, these TV shows people tell me are great, that critics, that experts are like, this is wonderful, this is amazing, this is cinema, this is great TV, this is peak streaming, I don't agree. I like to spend my time watching Drag Race, Real Housewives, Survivor, Below Deck, 9-1-1. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are the shows that I look forward to every week. So in the new year, in 2023, I am going to be staying true to that. And I'm going to be watching things that I enjoy. And I'm going to try to save myself some boredom and some time wasting by like not committing to things anymore that I either don't enjoy from the jump or that I'm only watching because I'm told this is good. So that I can like put it on my year end list, because that's just not how I operate or how I want to operate anymore. Speaking of, just really quickly, I'll tell you some of what my favorite TV of 2022 was, because a lot of it is not in line with what you may be expecting based on other critics' top lists. Here is what my favorite TV of 2022 was: The White Lotus, expected. The Gilded Age, I loved it. Not a lot of people did. Drag Race All-Star 7. As go back and listen to those episodes, I fucking loved it. Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip. That's not going to be on anybody else's top 10 list of the year, but you know what? That shit is entertaining, and you know what you're signing up for when you watch it. I fucking love this season at Bluestone Manor. Can't wait for season 3. They just announced the cast of season 4. Not thrilled with all the casting, but still, can't wait. She-Hulk. Loved it. Interview with the Vampire. You can go back and listen to that Halloween episode. I also loved that. Life and Beth. The Amy Schumer show on Hulu. So good. So sweet. Only Murders in the Building. The final season of This Is Us, which was heart-wrenching and fucking incredible, and everyone forgot about it when they were making their lists. American Horror Story NYC. Go ahead, go back, listen to that. I loved that shit. Queer as Folk. Gone Too Soon. Peacock, you made a mistake. You should have brought it back. Lizzo's Watch Out for the Big Girls. Loved that. So entertaining, so body positive, so trans-inclusive, and inclusive in general, diverse. I loved that shit. The Boys. I watched every episode of The Boys over my Christmas break, starting from the very beginning because I hadn't seen it. And I ended up loving the third season a whole lot. I can't wait for Gen V when it comes out this year and the fourth season. Bumper in Berlin, which is the Pitch Perfect spinoff on Peacock. Super fast, super entertaining, real cute. I don't care that it wasn't about the Bellas. It was very entertaining and very funny, and I love Fula Borg. Julia. The HBO Max series about Julia Childs. Couldn't get enough. The woman in the house across the street from the girl in the window, I think is what it's... The full title, I forget. That came out a full year ago. If you remember that episode. Obsessed. So funny, so stupid. The Orville. Unsung. Go watch the show. It is all three seasons are on Hulu and Disney Plus. This most recent season was beautiful. It was amazing. The episodes were long and rich. Oh, God, I loved it. Abbott Elementary, expected. Everyone loves it. We Are Here, the most recent season, was its best. It's the shortest, but also the best. And Uncoupled on Netflix. So a lot of those things you're not going to see anywhere else, but that is what I enjoyed the most this year. You will notice there are things missing that other critics absolutely cream their pants over. House of the Dragons, Severance, The Bear, The Patient. I talked about some of these things on the podcast. I didn't like them. I'm so sorry. Ted Lasso, I'm not watching it. I know everyone loves it, including real people, so I probably will like it. I don't want to. I just don't want to, and this is the year of watching what I want to watch. So there you have it. Okay, what I am going to talk about today briefly, because I've been rambling for 23 minutes now at this point, I first want to talk about the real friends of WeHo. You may have heard of this show. You may not have heard of this show. If you have heard of this show, you are gay or you are a part of gay culture. Welcome. Love you. So The Real Friends of WeHo is a terribly titled Real Housewives ripoff that is airing on MTV on Fridays at 9 following the new season of RuPaul's Drag Race. And it is meant to capitalize on the success of the Real Housewives franchise, but with gay people. Now, if you're sitting there in your car or in your shower or you're making dinner and you stop chopping that onion, you're like, wait, this sounds vaguely familiar. You are correct. Logo, what, 12 years ago, I think at this point, tried to do the same thing. And I think also aired it right after RuPaul's Drag Race, where they tried to make a gay Housewives, basically. And it was called the A-List. And it was the A-List New York and the A-List Dallas. And it starred Ryken Lemkul, who was coming off of a win on The Amazing Race and had just dated Lance Bass when he came out of the closet. And it also starred a model named Rodney Santiago, who is still around. Austin Armacost, who was like in Playgirl and had dated Marc Jacobs. So it was like basically it was much closer to the Real Housewives vibe at the time, like a trashy Housewives, than Real Friends of WeHo, which is going for like a boss Housewives vibe, which I'll get to. And it was essentially the same setup of like, hey, we're a bunch of gay people who are friends and we live in New York and we're gonna, you know, get on camera and be messy. That's what the Real Friends of WeHo is. Now, people have very strong opinions about this show, even though it just premiered a couple of days ago, because MTV made a very also RuPaul's Drag Race is on MTV now, not VH1. It's buried the lead there. They made the decision to cut back episodes of Drag Race from 1.5 hours to 1 hour, like the way it used to be. I think the first season to have 90-minute episodes was season 10. This is season 15. We survived with hour-long episodes for longer than we didn't, so I'm okay with that. I don't need our episodes to be 1.5 hours. I sometimes felt when they were that there was a lot of filler. It would have been nice maybe for the first few episodes of the season because there's 16 queens and like trying to cram in 16 queens worth of personality and story into 40 minutes. Essentially, excuse me if you heard that hiccup. into essentially 40 minutes of TV is a lot to ask for. But also, I love how fast it is. I have no problem with it. And also, I have no problem with them trying to launch a new show after it. I'm okay with that too. So that's one reason people are automatically hating the show, is that they think it's the reason that Drag Race has been cut back 1 hour. Like, it may be, but also MTV is just being smart. Like, one, it is easier to retransmit shows that are 1 hour than it is to retransmit shows that are 1.5 hours. So let's say they want to run a rerun of Drag Race. It is easier and cheaper for them to just run 1-hour-long episode than to run 1.5-hour episode, because then they have to put something else in the half hour. If they put in Untucked, they're paying a retransmission fee on Untucked. Do you see what I'm saying? So to fill that 2-hour time slot, they're now going to pay a retransmission fee on 2 shows rather than on 1 show for that hour slot. And also, it's just smart to have your highest rated show with all these eyes to try to like build something else. Also, people hate the show because the cast is very divisive, mostly because it contains Todrick Hall, who is very controversial. I do not like him very much, but a lot of people do. So there's that. I think this show is just fine. Hot take. It's not terrible. I didn't hate it. You should give it a try. It's messy as hell. The cast is not as grating as the A-list cast was. They are not like as obsessed with money as the Real Housewives are. They're not as obsessed with status, I don't think, as the Real Housewives are. I think they're mostly just really obsessed with feeling important. And as a gay person, I can relate to that because it's, you know, you're told all your life, like when you're a certain way and you come from certain areas and houses and families, that like, you shouldn't be this way, you're worthless, all that. So like when you get, like if you're on TikTok and get a bunch of followers, you cling to that because that's validation. If you are a Todrick type person where, you know, you get a bit of success, you want more of that because he's a gay Black man. That's not something he probably ever really was told was something he could attain. I'm not gonna lie, I did not hate it. I didn't really enjoy it very much because it wasn't all that interesting. Like, that's, I think, the biggest crime with this show is that so far it's not interesting. And like, as we all know from watching Housewives, especially the most recent was Salt Lake City. That show started with a bang. The first episode was Jen Shah throwing the party for Meredith Marks, where Mary Cosby said, "You smell like hospital, it's triggering. Your aunt should have drank more water if she didn't want to get her legs amputated." Like, it was fucking wild. Right off the bat, operating out of 10, all engines firing. That is not what the Real Friends of WeHo did. So that's the biggest crime, is that so far, I don't really care about most of the cast except the ones that I am familiar with. And I am familiar with quite a few of them. So the cast is Brad Goreski, who is a judge on Canada's Drag Race, a celebrity stylist, you've probably seen him on the red carpet for E!, and got his start on the Rachel Zoe Project, like 15 plus years ago, I would say, on Bravo as her assistant. He also had his own Bravo show called It's a Brad, Brad World. I love Brad. I find him very entertaining. I love his husband, Gary. He's adorable. He seems relatively down to earth, I think. So I think he's a great kind of linchpin. Like, if we're comparing this to A-List New York, he's the Mike Ruiz. He's like the fairy godmother of the group that like everyone knows, and he knows everyone, even if it's tangentially. That's kind of the glue. Like, they started with Brad and were like, okay, we got someone the fags are familiar with. I'm so sorry for any of you who don't realize that I say that word sometimes. Maybe I should cut that out. I'm not gonna. The gays. Sorry. He's the linchpin for the gays. Then we have Todrick Hall, who is the Ryken. He's the one that everyone knows. He's got a little bit of controversy surrounding him. Ryken had his dick pics leaked from A-List New York and was cast in a musical even though he couldn't sing and all that. But he's like the popular one. He's the name that people are going to be watching this for. And Todrick, to his credit, addresses all the controversies head on. He doesn't solve them. Like, I think he thinks he lets himself off the hook. He fucking doesn't. But whatever, like, it's fun to have some drums in the background, right? Then we also have James Vaughn, who right off the bat admits, he's like, you probably don't know who I am, but you definitely know my husband, Jonathan Bennett. Love Jonathan Bennett. Ugh, love. The Holiday Sitter was so good. Mean Girls, Hallmark Channel, the Mean Girls Burn Book Cookbook, whatever that was, with like the parody Mean Girls recipes, Entertainment Tonight, New Year's Eve in Times Square. Love Jonathan. And he literally says, like, well, you asked my husband to do it, and he said no. That is some shit that I'm here for. Break that fourth wall, you bitch. And he's like a television host, and he and his husband own a travel company together, and he is so personable and likable right off the bat. Then we have Curtis Hamilton, who is like, you probably know me from Surviving Compton. I played Dr. Dre. And I'm like, oh shit, he was in Straight Outta Compton. And then I had to check myself and be like, no, he said Surviving Compton, which is a made-for-TV movie about NWA, not the one that had Corey Hall. What's that his name? The one that got nominated for Oscars, not him. And he is coming out of the closet with this show. That is a fascinating angle, that they got someone to commit to this show who was not out. So, like, he had time between filming and announcement to come out, and which is not long. Like, I think they filmed this in, like, November, which, again, also makes for a very interesting TV show. Then we have Dorian Renault, who, I think that's how I say his name, who owns a skincare company called Butta, which is a skincare line specifically targeted to Black people and to melanated skin. And he's very full of himself and thinks he's more important than he probably actually is. And I find his delusion super entertaining, big housewife vibes off of Dorian. And then finally, we have Joey Zazig, who is apparently like famous on TikTok and Instagram as an influencer. I'd never heard of him. He's the most desperate. He's the Austin, if we're again with the A-List comparisons. He's the Austin of this. He's the young one. He's the messy one. He's the one who's perpetually online. Do it for the gram. Is like, might as well be tattooed on his fucking forehead. That's our cast. There is representation. There are one, two, three queer Black men, and then one, two, it's six. Oh yeah, so it's three and three. Three white queer men. You have Brad, who is like a little bit older than the others, but by no means old. It's a nice mix of people. The problem, again, is like they're calling the show The Real Friends of WeHo, and they right off the bat make it clear these people are not friends. Most of them don't even know each other. The first episode, Joey and Dorian just meet each other at Joey's engagement party. So not everyone knows everyone else. Brad is like, oh yeah, I've met you. Oh, I knew Joey when we were both in New York, which, like, that has to be like a decade ago, right? So like they know it's like gay culture. It's like gay communities, right? It's like, oh yeah, we say, oh yeah, I know that girl. And it's someone that like you met one time at a party, or that like you made eyes with at a bar, or that you matched with on Tinder or messaged on Grindr, like, or that you just go to the same bar so you feel like you know each other. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very that kind of relationship with most of these people. And honestly, that's how I feel like most gay relationships are. So I'm fine with it. And like I said, this is not like, it's not boring, or it's not, it's like, it's, I don't know. I feel like the A-list tried really hard to like make them bitchy and to make story happen. These guys are like, here's who I am. We don't all know each other, but we're going to get to know each other. Brad literally says the reason he did the show is because he wants to make new gay friends. So like, okay, wonderful. Like how, and if that's great with a group of gay people, because unlike the Housewives, where they have to pretend that they're friends, that they've always been friends, that they have this connection, to kind of explore the angle of like, what is it like to put a bunch of gay men all together and see how they react? Being part of that culture, I know how this is going to go. Some people are going to immediately glom on to each other and act like they've been best friends forever. And some of them are going to, right off the bat, for no reason, fucking despise each other. And that's what I'm here for. And we're already getting inklings of that by the end of the first episode. Because Dorian, who runs this company, Butta, which, by the way, I looked this company up. They're very affordable, but also I'm very confused by what the point of them is. Like, it seems like it's a complete advertising tactic. Like, Dorian said that Butta is geared toward melanated skin, and all the stuff on the website says for melanated skin. But then looking at the ingredients, it's all the same shit that's in everything. Like, there is nothing at all special about the ingredients. Maybe it's the formulations. Maybe it's, like, the level of things that's in it. But there's a hyaluronic acid gel that's affordable that I looked at and was like, oh, wow, that's a big container for $20. Like, I use hyaluronic acid. Maybe I should consider getting this. And it says it's for oily skin, which I don't have oily skin, but, like, it's hyaluronic acid. What's the difference? But then I looked at the ingredients and there's nothing special about it. It's all the same ingredients as any other hyaluronic acid you can find on the market. So is it literally just that he is a black man who's marketing skincare to black people? Because if that's the case, that's fine. There is obviously a market for that and good for you. Like, you're in Macy's and Nordstrom. Cool. But what makes it for skin that has more melanin? Maybe it's other products that are specific to that. I don't know, but I was looking at the cleanser and the moisturizer, and the cleanser literally is all, and I'm not, no shade, it is literally all the same ingredients as my cleanser that's from Walmart. Like, I got the $5, which is, I think, a knockoff of Cetaphil. So, like, if it's the same ingredients as Cetaphil or whatever, then you're just slapping your name on it and your face on it and saying it's for this group when it's just the same thing. So that's where my opinion of like, he seems a little full of himself comes from. And then he goes to Joey's engagement party, because he gets invited as a plus one for Curtis, who actually knows Joey apparently, and hires security to go with him. He's like, CEOs don't go anywhere without security. I just want to be like, but like, yeah, you're a CEO, but people don't know who you are. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're not Elon Musk. So bizarre, so self-important, but also that's the kind of shit we love. He's very much a Karen Huger from The Real Housewives of Potomac. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's got like that level of I am the most important person in the room delusion. And that can be very entertaining. I'm looking forward to seeing what else he brings this season. Okay, the other like main storyline besides this little engagement party, which is where the episode ends, is Todrick addressing all these rumors about his life, and like, he doesn't really ever solve anything. But we do get some fun cameos from Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange, who are quote unquote recording a podcast where Todrick is the guest, but like, I didn't see plugs coming out of those microphones, so maybe they weren't actually recording anything. That's not for me to say. But he like addresses one of the rumors, which is that he owed $100,000 in rent. He's like, I own my house, and he shows a deed to it. It's like, okay, but a court literally told you to pay $100,000 in rent. So what was that for if it wasn't for your house? It had to be for something. Either it was for the house before this house, or it's for a studio. The court didn't just lie. Do you know what I mean? So he didn't really address anything with the, he doesn't pay his dancers. Like, he posted, or he talked about how when he, it all stems from, what's the name of that? Hair, hips, duh, 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 duh. You know the song I'm talking about. Lips, hair, something, heels. I don't fucking know. Anyway, that he, when he posted that he wanted dancers, he said, this is unpaid. So he's basically saying, like, well, I told him they weren't going to get paid, which doesn't address the fact that he hasn't paid other people for things that aren't that video. Like Manila Luzon, who tweeted that she was owed money by him for, like, a gig that she hosted or something. So he's, like, trying to address these things, but not really. So that's fascinating because I find Todrick to be the most delusional of anyone. Like, he has achieved a level of fame that is very surprising, but he's very talented, so maybe not surprising. But the way he's handled that fame, I think, is very bad. He does not know how to be famous at all. And I find that entertaining. People who get famous and, like, don't really know how to handle it are so... It's the reason why we watch The Real Housewives, right? Is these people who get famous and then, like, implode because they literally don't know how to deal with fame. Or, like, they tweet and delete or they... whatever. Entertaining. But the bottom line for the show is it is inoffensive. It is not espousing to be a representation of the entire gay community. They all fully admit that they don't really even live in WeHo. The problem is the marketing of this show. It should not be called The Real Friends of WeHo because, one, they don't all live in WeHo, and, two, they're not all friends, let alone real friends. So call it, they want that connection to The Real Housewives. But if you, so call it something else. And I think a lot of the problem is solved. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Call it like a delusional homosexuals. There you go. You're welcome, MTV. Better title. Delusional homosexuals. Delusions of gay grandeur. There you go. But something where, like, you're making it clear that this is a campy, stupid show about people hanging out but who don't necessarily need to be connected to a location or to a circle of friends. Because if you watch the episode, they're none of those things. It's very strange. But whatever, it's not bad. Like, if you're boycotting it because you're mad about Drag Race being shorter, get over it and watch it. Like, even if you hate watch it, I can sense this show being very entertaining in a very I hate how much I love this way. Which, again, is my favorite kind of TV show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I love that kind of TV show. So new episodes are airing on Fridays at 9 o'clock, and you can watch them live. You can watch on demand on MTV. It's not, like I said, it is not terrible. And for the previews coming up, I love mess. Insert Marie Kondo gif here. I love mess. And that is what this show promises to give, is mess. Let it. Let it give you mess. Enjoy the mess. That's all I have to say about that. Okay, my recommendation, and also the other show that I've been obsessed with, I watched it all in the weekend it released, is The Traitors, which the whole first season is on Peacock right now. If you have not heard of this show, you're living under a rock. It started slow, not everyone was watching it right away, but by the end of the first week, it came out on the 12th. So by the end of this past week, I could not escape mentions of the show on Twitter, podcasts. It's taking over. Rightfully so. This show was so goddamn entertaining. It is the best kind of reality competition where it mixes all the best parts of Survivor, Big Brother, the BBC, and that game that we all played probably in middle school, Mafia. It's that. It's basically that game. So the setup is a bunch of people, half reality TV stars, half quote unquote real people, go and live. I think it's 20 of them. Yeah, 20 people go and live in a Scottish castle. And three of them are selected to be traitors, meaning that in the game, you have to find out who the traitors are. You complete challenges to win money, and then the money goes into the pot. And everyone is playing together, and you're playing with the traitors. So there are people who are working against you. But then there are also people who are on your side, kind of like the mole. You don't know who's who. And at the end of every episode, the traitors get together and they murder someone, meaning they vote them out of the game. And then at the end of every episode, everyone else gets to banish someone, and they're supposed to be banishing people they think are the traitors. But they don't know how many traitors there are. We know because we see host Alan Cumming, who is fucking phenomenal. So funny, so campy, so good. in the show select three traders. But apparently the people on the show are told there can be anywhere from 2 to 5 traders. So I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, so every episode the traders get are and the faithful, they're called, are all together and they all get to vote, and the traders are trying to deceive. So like they don't want people to know who they are, because if the trader, if there are however many traders are standing at the end, they win the money. So the way the money works is like it's up to $250,000 in the pot. And at the end of the series, after all the murders and the banishments, and we're left with however many people in the last episode, if there are any traitors at all, no matter how many, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 left, they split the money. If there are no traitors left, the faithful split the money. So the money goes to the traitors if any of them are left. Even if it's only one, they get all the money. So basically you have to work to get rid of all the traitors. It's a game of trust. But then how do you really trust it when production has lied to you or like given you too much leeway? Basically, Kate Chastain, who's on the show from Below Deck and is the main reason I watched this, because I love her and miss her on TV, has been doing interviews where she's like, this was explained to me as a psychological thriller show. I did not know I was gonna be doing physical challenges. And then also when they told us what the outcome was, it seemed like it was rigged in favor of the traitors, which it totally is. So she was like, and I knew I wasn't a traitor, so like I just wanted to leave. Why am I gonna try to win money for people that win money that I'm never gonna get to see? And why am I trying to work with people who don't like me for literally no reason and think I'm a traitor when I'm not? Like it's very entertaining. But it does seem to be kind of rigged in the favor of the traitors, which when you see who the traitors are this season, a lot of Survivor fans are going to be very happy. Speaking of, so the cast of reality TV people come from Survivor. There are two people from Survivor. It's Siri, who's been on a whole bunch of seasons, and Stephanie LaGrossa, who's also been on a bunch of seasons. They are both, I believe, on Heroes versus Villains. Anyway, Rachel, who was on Big Brother, Cody was on Big Brother, Ari was on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, Kate was from Below Deck, there were other Bravo people, Kyle from Summer House, Brandy from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and Ultimate Girls Trip, Reza from Shaws of Sunset. So basically, like, I watched the show because they picked some great Bravo celebrities to put on it. Like, Brandy, Reza, Kate are the reason I watched it. But I'm going to let you know that if that's the reason you want to watch it, for those three people, do not. Because, spoiler alert, the Bravo people do not do very well. Or actually, that's a lie. They do too well. They do too well, so they're banished or murdered early, which is entertaining. But basically, this show is so entertaining and so engrossing because we know information that the people doing the show don't, it is so entertaining to watch them fail so miserably. Like, it gets frustrating at some point where, like, they've banished and murdered, like, more than half the cast, and they haven't found or even voted for a single traitor yet. So that's entertaining to watch. But then, like, okay, so there's one person who gets to the end who never once assumes or votes for a traitor. The whole show, he never picks out a traitor, but he makes it to the end and then is rightfully burned, which is hysterical. Like, seeing that arc was just so satisfying as a person who enjoys Schadenfreude. And then, like I said, Kate Chastain is the most entertaining TV personality, I'm going to say, on Bravo after watching this show. She is gold. Her reactions are amazing. You might have seen some of them floating around the internet already of her, like, looking in a butter knife and me like, still gorgeous. That's been floating around. She's been making the rounds with interviews on podcasts and magazines and blogs and stuff. And, like, she is gold. Gold. Watch the show just to be entertained by her. She is both perfect in that she does exactly what you want a reality TV star to do, but also in that she is thinking and speaking and acting in the way that I think a lot of us would act if we were on a reality show like this. And like I said, Alan Cumming is just chef's kiss perfect as the host. The challenges are kind of fun sometimes. The house they live in is gorgeous. And it's just, it's a fun game. The finale botches the landing a little bit, but it's so entertaining. It's so worth a watch. The whole season dropped all at once on Peacock. You have to watch it. If you got that Peacock special, or it was 99 cents a month or $1.99 a month or whatever the hell, you have to watch this show. It will suck you in. It's so good. I know the month is, or the year is only a month old, but it is already my favorite show of the year. I love it. Okay. So there is both something I want to talk about and a recommendation for the week. I didn't look up what was finales and stuff this week. I didn't really look up stories. Although if you've been looking at any news, if you've been following like anything even tangentially on social media, everything's getting canceled. I mentioned Netflix canceled Uncoupled in 1899. CBS canceled NCIS Los Angeles. Peacock canceled One of Us is Lying and Vampire Academy, the latter of which was surprising to me. What else? Something else that I watched. Nancy Drew and Riverdale have both been canceled by the CW, but they renewed All American. What else? I know there's a whole bunch of other things that I'm just like forgetting. HBO Max is doing HBO Max things as usual. I feel like it's been a bloodbath. And then of course, as I'm on the spot trying to think of everything, I legit just can't because story of my life. Abbott Elementary, I know, got renewed for a third season, even though it's still airing its second season. Yeah. I didn't really look up other things. Sorry. But Golden Globes happened. They were terrible. That came back. It was on a Tuesday. Why? They were bad. And then also, apparently, it was a super spreader event. Because then the Critics' Choice Awards were was on a Tuesday. Critics' Choice Awards were over the weekend. And like half the people that were supposed to be there weren't because they got COVID. Jamie Lee Curtis, Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, some other folks. They apparently all got COVID at the Golden Globes, which is just so funny that everyone at the Golden Globes is like, it's so great to be here in person. It's so good to see all of you. And then it turns out that they were just giving each other COVID. Because of course they were. Of course they were. Do we not understand how this works yet? Like, come on. Anyway, I think I'm going to wrap it up. If you're looking for some escapism, as I said that I am, The Real Friends of WeHo is so mindless, brainless, stupid. Give it the first episode a watch. The Traitors, so engrossing, so entertaining. Like I said, I also started watching The Way Home on Hallmark Channel, and episodes are streaming on Mondays on Peacock. It's very gentle and like lulling. I don't know if that's a word, but you watch it and it's like putting on a blanket. It's the feeling I get from a lot of Hallmark Christmas movies, but it's not Christmas. It's very sweet and kind of stupid, which, again, is Hallmark. So if you're looking for a brainless scripted show, that's a good one. I also watched the first 5 episodes of Breakpoint on Netflix. And whether you're a tennis fan or not, if you like documentaries, it's very well made and very interesting. I happen to love tennis, so I was really into it. There's a lot. It's January, so a lot of TV that's coming out this month is geared toward this exact type of feeling of like, it's the doldrums, it's cold, I just want to put a blanket on and turn the TV on and zone out. So there's a lot happening this month on TV that you probably can't really go wrong with if you're looking for something that's like, yeah, like I said, brainless. So I don't know when I'm going to be back. Maybe next week, maybe the week after. I'm going to aim, I think, for bi-weekly episodes. So hopefully I'll talk to you all in a couple of weeks. But thank you for tuning in this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back with more news, recaps, reviews, analyses. And thank you for listening to this. And if you have suggestions of... like, if you're someone who listens to this episode and you're like, oh, shit, I do not listen regularly, please tweet me. The Twitter is in the show notes, at Fake TV Critic. And just let me know why. Like, are you just busy? Do you only listen to episodes of things you watch? What's the dealio? Let me know so that I know what to expect. And, like, maybe that'll also change what I talk about and when. Okay, thank you all once again for tuning in. I will talk to you soon. Have a good week, everyone.